Blog Talk Radio.
Joining us today, it is April 21st. My name is Slick Pablo Vic, and you are tuned in to Political Conscious. Thank you all for being here. I really appreciate you spending your time with us, and looking forward to a really good show today. Great panel of guests, which we always have every week, and let me introduce them. Later on, we're going to be joined by a dear friend, Josh McCorder. But with us right now, the leader of the Sports Crib Network, the reason we're here today, and I always give him mad props for this, James King, how are you doing, my good friend?
I'm doing great tonight, Vic. How are you doing out there in South Carolina?
You know, South Carolina, weather's beautiful, women are beautiful, food tastes good, so I can't really complain, and thank you for asking. And also with us, another dear friend, and almost like a brother to me, honestly, Sean Hartness. Sean, tell us a little bit about how you're feeling.
I'm feeling great. It's Friday. I got a long week done under my belt, and I'm going to Spain on Tuesday.
This man is going to Spain on Tuesday, guys. We're balling like that, okay? But some more good news for Sean, actually. Sean informed me today that his wife is officially a green card holder. Is that correct, Sean?
Yep, it came in the mail. We're very
excited.
So
congratulations.
Thank you.
And to the people out there who are wondering and don't know about how difficult it is with the whole immigration process, I know you were very frustrated about it, and you had to go through a lot of the trials and tribulations of attaining something like that. What is a green card? What did you have to do to get it?
A green card is a permanent residency card. If you have the green card, you don't need a visa to be in the country and not be a citizen. So you can have a green card, you can work, you can live, you can have a social security number, you can get a driver's license. It's one step away from being a citizen, basically. And to get it, there's a lot of ways to get it, a lot of processes. They all involve a bunch of government forms, a bunch of looking into your background, getting sponsors, medical forms, birth certificates from your country of origin, et cetera, et cetera. It's a lot of paperwork. The one I did specifically was for a spouse. So basically I had to sign up as a sponsor, and then we had to send all of our documentation together, mine and hers. And they looked into my taxes. They looked into everything. So it's a very involved in somewhat slow process. We were lucky in then how fast it went, but we know a lot of people and have heard a lot of stories that we were very lucky because it's such a pain. It is difficult to get it, and they have made the process hard. So,
and you're absolutely right in the fact that it is difficult and a long, arduous process, because I got family in India who are still trying to do the paperwork or find means to get over here. And it is very lucky that, and very fortunate, because your wife is a wonderful woman, and I'm happy that she can be here with us as long as she desires. But you're absolutely right. It's a long, hard process, and I don't think people really understand how much commitment it takes, how much patience, and how thorough all this truly is. They think people just come to the country willy-nilly, but it's really not that easy.
It's not that easy, and it's not that easy to do it legally. It's really not. I don't like how everyone says it's so easy to get in this country illegally. It's so easy, but it's not even easy to get in illegally or legally through legal means. It's it's ridiculously difficult. And for someone, I'm an American citizen. I didn't have Spanish citizenship when I was living there. So I'm an American citizen saying, I'm moving home, which I have every right as an American to do. And I'm like, I'm married, by the way. This is my wife. And it's still, they needed to, it almost, I almost needed to get a joint sponsor, which literally the easiest way to explain what a joint sponsor is to have, it's like a cosigner on a lease, but instead of it being a lease from a bank, it's being a cosigner on a person and being financially 100% responsible for that person. If I couldn't have done it for whatever reason, the person who signed the document would have had to have literally paid financially to take care of my wife if necessary. So, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. It's a pain. It's a pain.
And one thing, let me interject one thing, that's also that you have to be responsible for them for a decade. Am I right?
Yes, it's for 10 years, yes. You are responsible either up to 10 years or, what was it? It was either 10 years or if the individual became financially stable and had savings over a certain amount. And whichever one of those came first. So it was either 10 years or to have it was a lot of money to have in savings, honestly. It wasn't some small number. So, yeah, they hold you to it. They're going to come after you in every way. Obviously, it wasn't a problem. I didn't have to get a co-sponsor in the end, thankfully. And I was able to work it out. But, like I said, I know people that have had to get co-sponsors. And most of them will get their family to sign on, which is understanding in common, but still, I mean, go and ask a family member, hey, will you co-sign on the mortgage for my house? That's cool, right? Most people would tell you no. I mean, it's kind of the same idea.
So we're really lucky and happy that, Marisol got the green card, and that really is that's an awesome thing, man. And my parents are immigrants here. My parents attained citizenship, and I actually remember my mom being sworn in Charleston, South Carolina, with a whole bunch of other people, and her studying for a Constitution test. It's funny because, they make to
the
become a citizen, be naturalized. They make you, study and take a test, and it ends up that immigrants know more about our history than people who actually were born and grew up here.
Yeah, they can tell you more amendments of the Constitution say. They can tell you more presidents, more history, more who's in charge of each part of the branch of the government, including the two leaders in Congress as they change out. I mean, they hold them up to a lot of standards to pass the citizenship test that if you go out and ask a random person on the street, you're going to get some really ridiculous answers. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
right.
If I could roll on this for just a second, this point before we move on, the thing that is so aggravating is the difficulty of this process and everything makes me so upset because immigration is a huge issue in this country, especially illegal immigration. I mean, talk about the wall, et cetera. But it just seems so ridiculous to me that the policies in this country are going towards attacking an effect. If you have a problem in your life that's cause and effect based, you don't go after the effect. It's like trying to put a bucket underneath a leaky roof. Yeah, it might work for a while, but you're eventually going to have a full bucket of water and you're going to have to put another one. You go fix the roof, right? Now, I'm using this as a metaphor because you can't just try and stop illegal immigration with the wall. They're going to figure out another way to do it. You need to fix the process to making legal immigration easier because people want to come. They want to work. It's shown that most of them aren't criminals. So why do we make it so hard? Why are there so few visas? Why don't we have a simpler process of being able to monitor people if we need to because they want to work and they have to check in at work every day or whatever and send those records? I'm sure plenty of people would be willing to do that. Or, an even stronger position would say go fix the poverty issues around the world, but I'm a little liberal on that point of view. But still, it doesn't make sense that we're just going to try and pretend like we can stop people instead of trying to attack the cause of the issue and help people get in legally or help them not want to leave their own country. So anyway, that's, I had to go on a little rant about that. Sorry.
To make things even more challenging now, they're trying to cut down on the number of HB1 visas that are given out. So we're talking about people who are bright minds, who are great in engineering and software development from places like India and China, and they're not allowed to get these special visas to come to our country and come work and add to our tech industry. That's kind of troublesome to me. That sounds like a brain drain to me, where we're not letting the best and brightest come here because we're worried about where they're coming from. I don't know. Would you guys parallel that to, in a weird way, would you parallel that somehow to affirmative action, giving preference to American people and American employees when trying to hire? Or what do you guys think about that parallel? James, you think there's something there?
The parallel with the affirmative action kind of, I'm a little uneasy with that. And the reason why.
Yeah, I agree.
And the reason why is because, you know, you're talking about your own people, you know, people that have been here all of their lives, they're already citizens. Now, I do, if you wanted to equate it with some things, I would more equate it with the brain drain that we did on Europe after the Second World War. We did the same thing, you know, after the Korean War, where we, took some of the best North Korean and Chinese minds and, you know, assimilated them into the U.S. Intellectual community. The same thing, you know, with our rocket program, you know, as I said, after the Second World War, where if these people aren't an immediate asset to you, then you view them as a threat. You know, they either cooperate or else you put them in camps, as we did with the Japanese. In some cases, we didn't even need their cooperation. You know, I think it kind of goes back to almost the medieval mentality where, you know, the European, or in this case, America, feels that it has the right to judge people just solely on the fact of either the color of their skin or the particular locale in which they live.
And I have to agree, but I also want to say, though, that we are taking the best and the brightest from most countries around the world, because we do give out the visas, and the visas we give out are so limited, you know who's getting them. I mean, we vet these people. We take the best and the brightest, and we bring them here. I mean, looking, it's amazing how in the medical field, dental, in almost all the many of the major professions in the United States, the best and the brightest that are immigrants that do these jobs are the best and the brightest from their country. Now, one thing that I will say that I kind of like, and I mentioned this earlier, I was talking about this with someone, about American culture as far as taking jobs and having jobs. One thing about American culture that's very different from many other parts of the world is that when it comes to getting a job, nepotism is not as strong in this country. It helps a lot, but in most jobs, the best person is going to get the job in a lot of cases, the most qualified, especially when we're talking about these people that are on these visas, doctors and people in the IT community. These people get good jobs and they make money, and many of them are successful. And that's because I think culturally, when it comes to work, we say, no games, all right, this guy's way more qualified than anyone else, boom, And then, yeah, he might have issues. He might be seen as a threat. When he's at the job, he might be treated differently. But I do think as far as the hiring process goes, we're better than other countries, at least where I've lived in Spain, I have to say.
There's corruption everywhere in every country, but when I think about nepotism, I just look at the White House and I see nepotism there staring me straight in the face. And so
yeah,
we have our own corruption here. Yeah, I'm just saying we have our own corruption here, and we've already seen manifestations of this type of isolationism in the fact that there's certain airlines that are cutting trips to America in half because less people want to come visit us because of how burdensome it is to get here, how restrictive it is when you get to searching and applying and actually going through the process of getting here. So people are like, you know what, let's just go somewhere else. So there's actually airlines that are cutting flights to America, and it just makes me think that if I'm a smart person living in China or Germany or India or somewhere in the Middle East, and I'm qualified and I'm intelligent and I would be one of those bright minds to come to America, they would probably think twice. And at this particular time, they would probably think twice. Would you guys agree with that assessment?
Yeah, and I know I heard about the Emirates cutting all their flights too, and a lot of that had to do with the 7-country ban that's up right now. It really cut down the number of people that could fly.
Yeah, I have to agree with that when you said it absolutely cut down on the number of people that it effectively eliminated. I mean, and, you know, these are some of the countries that where the elite class are the ones who spend the money. And if you're not letting them in for one reason or another, the gold spins anywhere. You know, I'm pretty sure, if you've ever been to Dubai, you can see that.
Yeah, and I have been there, and you're absolutely right. I didn't actually walk around there. It was just sort of like an airplane trip when I was in the airport. But there are some concerns about this America first mentality. I mean, I believe that we should unite, work together to make our country into something spectacular, something better than it's ever been. But we're not going to do that unless we have a diverse group of people to do it with, because the best ideas come from a collection of people. And that's why it concerns me when we have things like a Muslim ban, trying to get through the courts. Thankfully, there's a hold on it right now due to a Hawaii judge who Jeff Sessions had the nerve to say that Hawaii is just some island in the Pacific and that a judge shouldn't have the right to hold up a crazy executive order like the one President Trump signed. That's another thing in it altogether. But what concerns me is that rhetoric, that mentality is starting to manifest itself here. And in my earlier shows, I had mentioned Indian people being victims of violence because they're brown. And for whatever reason, people think that's excuse enough to impose themselves on them. But just recently, a New York City cab driver had a drunk man rip his turban off his head. A sick man had a drunk driver rip a turban off his head, not to mention another cab driver who was violently beaten. And now there's people lobbying to push legislation about Safe Cab Drivers Act and stuff like that. I mean, this has never been an issue before. There's always been violence and targeting and discrimination and things like that. But we're seeing more and more violence in terms of people are just brown, results of hate crimes. A lot of go back to where you come from rhetoric, which I've had that directed at me on social media. Do you, James, and I'll start with you, and then I'll come to you, Sean. And if we get Josh in here, let me know. James, do you think that everything that's going on, okay, let's just put that to the side. Do you think that there's more room for people to be transparent about their prejudice and racism in today's America?
Is there more room?
And let me clarify that for you. I mean that when President Obama was in office, you know, a lot of people watched their lip and held their tongue. But now you see a lot of more heated language, and, you know, I hear a lot of things said to me that had never been said before. Do you, I mean, have you seen this, or do you think that it's just kind of isolated incidents?
No, it's not an isolated incident. The thing of it is that it may be new to you, just like, the heroin and the opiate epidemic has now spread to white America. So now it's a problem. When you have the leader of the quote-unquote free world more or less dividing people back into the caste system, you can't really... I don't think you can be transparent without paying a price, and that price is, people, just like there is no middle class anymore, there's no middle ground. It seems like you're either with me or you're against me. Which is, that's fine, if you're in a war or, a battle. But when you're talking about people's rights, we even voted on, Constitution. We had a constitutional Congress, before... we were effectively a country. This goes back to Ben Franklin and the original founding fathers. You can't, point out and say, we're going to keep the Second Amendment and we're going to keep the Seventh Amendment, but, the First Amendment and this amendment and this part of the Second Amendment, that no longer applies. Whereas transparency was, something that was tolerated under the Obama administration and previous administrations, this administration is an all on board or, get run over by the train.
So I agree with what you're saying, James. I want to shift it a little bit. Internationally, when I phrase this to Sean, and we see this kind of nationalistic, xenophobic behavior manifesting in France, where the French election is so critical, and one of the front runners, Marine Le Pen, has been now endorsed by President Trump, has been very vocal about anti-religion, won't even allow headwear, whether it's a yarmulke, a turban or a burqa, will allow any type of headwear, religious headwear, out in public. Sean, do you think that's even realistic?
No, I don't think it's realistic. And I think she's about as crazy as Trump is, to be honest. And I realize that I've been listening in a little bit on the French election because I think it's critical for Europe right now. And Marie Le Pen, she's just on the craziness for me. And one of the things that really solidified that for me today was after the there was an attack in Paris. A police officer was killed and one was seriously injured, and ISIS took the blame for the attack. And there was a televised interview of all 11 presidential candidates in France. And it was individual interviews. It wasn't like a debate. They were all there. Some of them canceled due to the attack, but they were all supposed to be there, and in, one by one they were interviewed. And she was saying she wanted to ban all types of immigrants and start deporting people. And she took a very nationalist view. And another candidate, to his credit, and I agree with him, he said, "This is shameful that you are taking the opportunity of a dead policeman to create this kind of stir in the media and amongst the people." And so, I mean, that's a little off topic from your question about the headwear, but I say it because I don't think anything the woman says is very realistic, or I don't think she has a good grasp of reality, to be quite honest. So if that answers your question.
James, do you think it's kind of like the same tactic that President Trump used? These big illusory promises, you guarantee all these things, you pitch a good game, kind of like the high school campaign speeches we used to run on, like, you know, fruit punch in the water fountain type things. But then when it comes time and they don't deliver, you know, the fans just turn the other way. Do you think that's what we're looking at here? Because she's talking about things like there shouldn't be mosques in France, you shouldn't be able to rock religious headgear. I mean, these are some pretty absurd and infringing policies she's suggesting. And like Sean said, they're not realistic, but people are voting for that idea. And she's a front runner. And President Trump endorsed her.
I think she's in second, potentially.
So, James, do you think that she can get away with just lying and, you know, people just turn the other way, like how they did with President Trump?
Well, you know, you can't only just say President Trump. What about Brexit? I mean, you know, here you have a whole nation of people voting for something that people are asking after they voted, what was that? What was that all about?
Yeah,
You can go back, you know, to some of the German elections, where you have some of parties associated with neo-Nazism and so-called nationalism. Trump came at a time, if you want to take it to an extreme, you came along just kind of like Adolf Hitler, where the people were so disillusioned that they allowed this cancer to kind of, you know, just sit there festering, and no one really paid attention to it until it was too late. And this is kind of what's happening to politics in the United States. Republicans have endorsed this guy, and people have taken to some of the things that he said he was going to deliver within the first 100 days, NAFTA, Obamacare, all of these things that he's never delivered, but people were open to his message, whereas I think maybe in this country, you know, after the death of the old guard, fathers and George Wallace, and you know, you could see other races had been assimilated into a society, which, you know, eventually did lead to affirmative action and things like that. Right now it's just we have so many of these politicians telling us, that this hasn't, this is your grandfather's politics and it doesn't work for you. And right now this is the message, that the college crowd, I guess, wants to hear. But then when you combine that with the old guard, This is why you still you have people like Trump in office.
Sean, you got anything to add to that?
Not really. I agree with a lot of what he's saying. And I think Trump's in office, just to piggyback off that, Trump's in office because of everything he said, but additionally, I've said it before, no one's voting, no one really participates. We've got such a small fraction of people participating. I don't even know if that's really how people feel in this country because I don't have the numbers to show it. So it's sad what's going on, and hopefully we'll get a big change. And I think it's going to be cultural and societal. People got to change, not really politics necessarily.
And that's one of the good bright spots about the French election is they have a very high voter turnout. I think it hovers around 80%. So,
70-80, yeah.
Yeah, if anything, their populace will speak up and they'll get a definitive answer. I think if we had a voter turnout that was that high, even 70%, that would be, we could be looking at a different president. Maybe someone we would have considered 4 years ago.
I'll say that it's interesting, though, piggybacking off that point. I heard a statistic on NPR today that, yeah, normally 70-80% of French people vote, but in this election, 40% of the people who can vote say they don't know who they're going to vote for. They don't have a candidate. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely right. Another story that's huge this week and making rounds all over every channel except Fox News, Bill O'Reilly. I mean, this is a guy who has been the face of Fox for so long. They were synonymous. He helped build that channel into the fearsome, enormous network that it is now. And now having to step away, and who knows what he's going to do. I know he got a $25 million severance package to leave. But we know the facts, guys. There were allegations that he still denies. There were settlements paid upwards of, I think, $13 million.
Yep.
So my question to you, Sean, is did Fox – well, obviously, Fox knew this was happening and didn't care. So doesn't that make them hypocrites?
No, they do care. They cared as soon as the advertisers started pulling out. Their money started going away. Of course they care. Advertisers started pulling out, and that's when Fox News started to care. Of course they didn't care before. He was making them money. They're a business. What did they care? Come on. They don't care about anything. They're making their money.
I mean, the bottom line is the most important thing. I think advertisers are starting to realize the power that they have. Corporations have always been so powerful in this country, but for once they're doing something good. Them pulling out resulted in, I mean, I'm sorry, Bill O'Reilly. I prefer Bill O'Reilly to some of the other guys on that network. But to see him step down and leave Fox as a huge blow, James, you must be laughing in your sleep. What do you think about it?
Oh, to me, it was a great thing, to see this happen to, one of those shiny suits, as I call them over there in Fox News. My only regret is that Fox, Sean Hannity is still there and nobody's caught him. My guess is that he's going to be caught, with his foot underneath the bathroom somewhere out on Virginia Highway.
Has he been
accused of that? No, I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
He looks, if you had to look at a sneaky guy, I mean, he would just fit the bill. The things that I probably really think about him are much worse than that. But when you see, a guy like Bill O'Reilly, as you said, other suits have been settled for as much as $13 million. You see all of sponsors, as you say, pull out. But you give him $25 million, and he gets the president's endorsement. He'll make even more money in the next 10 years on the lecture circuit. So have we really done it? Have we really done anything, you know, to punish Bill Ryan? I think, you know, I don't mind not being on TV for $25 million. I mean, you know, I'm not on it now for nothing. So, you know, hey, I think, you know, that whole thing was a farce. And somewhere along the lines, there should be criminal charges. It's going to be very interesting to see if
but
this sets another precedent. What was it?
But there were settlements made, so I mean, I don't think there could be criminal charges.
Well, but the one lady. Well, I mean, I don't know whether that's here or there. I mean, you know, that's more you guys, you know, expertise. But you know, I believe the 20th of May or somewhere around in here, isn't Donald Trump supposed to be going up on some kind of on similar cases? So you know, I'm just kind of interesting, you know. To see what kind of precedent this sets when you have the Attorney General saying, you know, that, you know, one man on a little island in the Pacific shouldn't have that much power, you know, so, you know, and you have Donald Trump saying, you know, that basically he has immunity because he's President of the United States, that this trial should even be going forward. You know, it's just interesting to me to see how all of these little things can be, you know, and when I say little, I'm putting that in quotations, can be, you know, handled this way by the upper class of this society. But when you look upon, you know, you look, you know, when was it, like less than 2 years ago, you had a young football player that was put in jail for by a woman that later came out and admitted that she had lied on it, you know, and I mean, you know, just, you know, but here you have, you know, a millionaire that gets paid, you know, to leave his job. I mean, you know, if we're not showing the inequity in the system, I don't know how many more examples you need.
Yeah. I agree with you.
If you got money, you're going to get out of it.
Yeah. And there's only certain ways nowadays you can actually, you know, get someone to take an L like that. And, you know, we're not going to take away anyone's money or anything like that. This is America. You earn that money, you got it. I mean, the Kardashians are rich, for goodness sakes. That's fine. But to see him not be on the O'Reilly factor, I mean, that's just a win in and of itself. After years and years of propaganda and false narratives and leading people to these judgments, I'm just happy to see that we won't have to look at that again. And that's just, in and of itself is a win for me.
I know what you're saying, and I was not I wasn't a fan of Bill O'Reilly. I haven't watched his show in years. I didn't really like him, but I mean, if people watch it and he makes the money he does because people watch it, yeah, okay, propaganda, misleading or whatever. I mean, sheep are going to be led, and if you don't want that, then people need to start learning how to stop being sheep. And I mean, any news source can do that. But I mean, I believe in freedom of speech, and I believe in, you know, if people are going to pay him to watch him on television, go for it. Does that mean he's saying the right things? No, but I'm smart enough to educate myself and not take what he and not take his word, you know. But him not being there just for the sake of not being there. I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you on that. Because if the tables were turned, or if it were any other way, I'd like to think that I'd say the same thing about a person on the other end of the extreme. So,
yeah, but we're not just saying him not being there. I mean, this guy
sexually harass women. So that's why he's not.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's yes, I thought you were referring to his TV show, the show, though.
I mean, I wouldn't want to knock anyone off the air just because there's idiots. I mean, that's rampant. But it's just nice to see someone who's a figurehead of Fox News, a network that Roger Ailes had to step away, now Bill O'Reilly stepping away. I mean, they're taking a lot of L's. I mean, they're playing Tucker Carlson in his slot. I mean, how desperate can you be? Tucker Carlson, that's a garbage show.
Yeah.
But, sorry, I got a little vent about that. Do you guys think it's a little ironic right now that I'm reading this breaking news that President Trump is dismissed, he has just dismissed our Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, a position that had already been manned? Do you think it's ironic that there's so many other vacant positions that have not been filled, that Trump is taking his time to fire Obama administration people instead? Sean, I'll start with you on that.
I think it's ridiculous that he wasn't organized enough to have a list ready for when he was elected. I mean, that's kind of, yeah, do they change out and fire other officials? Yeah, I think that happens a lot. But the fact that it's taken him this long and he's still weeding through them, that seems kind of silly to me. You know, it's like he's surrounded with so many people, you'd think that he'd have, you'd think he would have picked someone by now. Probably someone in his family, I'd guess, but I don't know. Yeah, he seems unorganized to me.
I mean, we're talking about, James, I'll come to you with this. We're talking about a guy who has his role, is doing a good job. There's no reason to fire him other than, you know, you want to put someone else in that position, politically speaking. But we have so many vacant positions in our government right now, unappointed positions. There's a hiring freeze. There's 2,000 vacancies. And on top of that, we're getting very, very close to the first 100 days being over. James, we don't even have a functional government. What do you think about this?
Well, you know, everyone talks about what a horrible job Obama did, and I'll admit his first term I was a little skeptical. As to what he could accomplish, especially having a hostile Congress. And then I look at, Mr. Trump here he has his party controls both the House and the Senate. And, you know, we can't, we still don't, when you think of it, have a functional running government. When you point to all the vacancies and the posts that haven't been filled and those that have been filled very recklessly, it proves that this man is very incompetent as doing his job or really leading his party.
And I just love hearing those words, man. I just love hearing it, and you can never say it enough. None of this is normal. We live in ultimate dimension right now. This can't be reality, but this is the reality we live in, so let's make the most of our situations. I'll go around the horn one time for some final words, and I'll start. Just want to thank you guys for joining me tonight. I love having these conversations just because I can touch base with y'all, see where you're at, and just hear your voices, because both of y'all are a tremendous impact on my life, and I'm really thankful for y'all. So thank you for being here and speaking to me, and thank you all for listening. And James, if I can get some parting words from you.
My parting words in this is, whenever you, we've all talked about transparency, There's never been more of a need for government to be more transparent with its people than with this administration. And with that, thank you, Vic, for letting me talk a little politics with you, and look forward to talking with you next week.
Thank you, James. Sean, any last words?
Yeah, I actually want to take the opportunity to plug a charitable organization, water.org. Matt Damon's the founder, and along with a business partner of his. Well, not business partner. They started this organization to help bring over the around 1 billion people in the world that need clean water, and it's really cool how they explain it. Go and check it out. They actually explain how it makes economic sense to help people, to give money to help people get water. And if not, drink Stella Artois, because they have an agreement with the beer company that every beer you buy brings someone get clean water. So anyway, wanted to plug that.
Thank you, guys. Check out water.org. Thank you for joining us here tonight. Really appreciate y'all. This is Political Conscious. I am Slick Pablo Vic. I will see y'all next week.